You're with Cape Talk.
This is Pippa Hudson on Lunch.
A WhatsApp asking about salaries since Marikana 10 years ago. What is the salary now? Maybe it's still the 12,000 rand they were fighting for, maybe less. Our community activists did say that there had been some improvement in salary and working conditions, and maybe our next guest might be able to take us a little bit further down that path, because Teto Matlakwana has been in Marikana for several days this week and is there today for the commemoration that is happening on scene. Teto, thank you very much for making time to step away from that event to chat to us. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Pippa. Good afternoon to you and the listeners.
Do you know the answer to that question? Have you had conversations in the last couple of days around how things have changed in terms of conditions of employment on the mines?
At the core of it, Pippa, is the obvious increase in wages, which is quite evident in the economic activity in the Marikana community and broadly. But from the mouth of those mine workers, most of them survivors of the Marikana massacre, is that they earn anything between 20,500 rand and 19,000 rand, which of course is quite a significant increase from that 12,500 rand that they had been calling for when the events that transpired that bring us back to the coffee today happened 10 years ago. But okay, at the back of that, people, we want to just remind the listeners that there was the 2014 strike in the platinum belt,
yes,
which lasted 5 months, quite historic. And it was that strike ultimately that pushed the salaries of workers in this particular mining industry up to those margins where they today sit. It was not particularly the strike and the massacre which immediately resulted in the improved wages that we see today.
Okay, thanks for reminding us of that, and good to know that at least the salary situation has improved. Teto, I mean, you've had several days there now to talk to families who lost fathers and husbands and breadwinners, and to reflect on this day 10 years ago. Tell us about some of the conversations you've had and how they are coping.
Before I come to that, I just want to paint a picture of where we are now and the kind of difficulties that the widows of the victims of the massacre are encountering. There's a clear division. They are all sitting on the stage. AMCU has set up a big black stage where they sit behind the leadership of AMCU and other dignitaries who are present here today, including Bishop Sioka and others who have walked this journey with them. But there's a clear division between the widows, and that's on the basis of the money which has been paid out, either through the reparations or either through other forms of compensation. There are families which show that others got more money than they were worthy of or they deserve because of the number of dependents, for example, in a family. A woman that we have put a spotlight on, Nokutula Zwambele, this whole week and in the past week, has had 10 dependents at the time of the passing of her husband. One of her children, of course, went on to take her own life. But she says, I'm sitting with 9 children and I still have not received a cent of the 500,000 rand that was promised to us,
sure,
through that reparations process. Yet I sit here with the knowledge that there are families who have even lesser dependents who have received in the regions of 1 million rand and above. So that 170 million rand that government loves to brandy about when coming to account to say from the Solicitor General's office, this is how much has been paid out, has not really trickled down at the level and to the degree which was expected. So
yeah,
there is that clear disjunction in how people perceive this day as a result of those divisions and how that money has been distributed. But at the core of it, they all share a common pain. They share common sorrow. They share common somberness. There is no happiness on the faces of any of these women. Some of them, of course, privately tell us that they would rather not even be here. They feel that they're being paraded to the world, whereas after an event like this, they're simply forgotten about and have to go back to the harsh reality of having to confront their children who are fatherless and having to be breadwinners and leave their homes in the Eastern Cape and other rural areas to come and work here at Sibanye Stillwater in Marikana to take over the spaces of their late husbands, meaning that homes are shut and they simply have to pack their belongings and come here, leaving behind children. And in the case of Zwambele's family, one child goes on to take their own life, and the mother says, I did not even know she was not well because I was not present to mother her.
Yeah. I mean, and Teta, the guilt that comes with that, an additional burden for that mother to deal with. I mean, for those who survived the shooting, they too live with, I would imagine, survivor guilt, with the knowledge that their friends, their compatriots in that fight for improved working conditions paid the ultimate price. It must, on a day like this, I would imagine, dig up a lot of trauma for them.
It does. It absolutely does. And this is what happens in Marikana every year. You will have the crowds that are gathered on the grass right opposite the stage on the field here, just below the Gopi, where a lot of those mine workers had tried to run to escape the bullets. Yet you have men who sit on the Gopi. And if you see the visuals on television, you'll realize there's a large group of men that sits on the Gopi and does not even march down to join the rest of the commemoration event. And those are the mine workers who are not ready to even listen to speeches looking back on that day. They say they are too traumatized. They say they are burdened. In fact, if they had their way, it would not be a celebration of any kind. It would be an event that is held behind closed doors so that a lot of them can weep in private. They come and they remove themselves from everyone else and sit on the Gopi and watch on as songs are sung, as people dance, as people cheer Amanda, as people praise Amkus leader Joseph Matunda. Because none of this, none of the conversations about money or persecution even touch the place where themselves, they themselves have not dared to go because the pain is that raw. That's what they say to us.
We're talking to Eyewitness News senior reporter Teto Matlokwane on the ground in Marikana today on the 10th anniversary of the shootings. Teto, one of our earlier guests made a comment about how a representative of Sibanye Stillwater had indicated they wanted to address the crowd and that that had been met with a very poor response. Would you like to elaborate? Has there been any formal representation from the miners?
Not so far on the program, and that would be an anomaly because since then there is a lot of tension between the mining company and not only AMCU but the community of Marikana broadly. People feel that it is 15 years after you tabled the social and labor plan, as you are meant to by law, to show and demonstrate how your presence in this particular area will uplift the community and uplift the lives of workers. And they say that none of the promises that were made in that plan have been realized. They say we listened to many other CEOs and representatives from the former mining company Lonmin that now has of course been taken over by Sibanye Stillwater, who came here and made several promises, but the time for that has passed. Too much time has gone by. It's been the 15 years since your SLP plan. It's 10 years since people were mowed down by the police. But even before that, people died from this strike that was caused by a dire need to push for salaries. An unprotected strike that workers went on without the sanctioning of by any union, that they felt we have been crying for too long for us to come and listen to more promises. So we do not expect that there will be any address by a representative of the mine or a representative of government, just simply because the tensions have even heightened with the backdrop of it having been 10 years before.
Teto, speaking of the tensions, you making goosebumps break out of my arms because I'm thinking back to a conversation 10 years ago at around about this time of day with Gia Nicolaides saying to me, things are really tense on the ground here. I don't like the way this is going. What sort of police and security presence is at the event this afternoon? And, is anybody worried that there might be any kind of incident at the event given how high tensions are running?
There's no concern around that particular issue, because for the first time, and AMCU was quite conscious of this and quite proactive about it, we were here on the Gopi yesterday when they met with different security cluster officials, emergency services, municipal officials who have come to simply say to them, how do we help you convene this event in a way that is befitting of the memory of those that you care about. And AMCU was very receptive to that. They had a leader, a regional leader, who addressed the marshals who are today looking after the gathering and the people here, saying that we are not trying to embarrass ourselves in front of the global community, saying it's been 10 years. This is a gathering like no other before. We need to be orderly. We need to ensure that there is peace at all times, because the people who pass on would not want a jamboree out of this, nor would they want there to be more blood spilled in their name. That message has definitely hit home. There's peace, there's conversing, there's a lot of picture taking of those who have not seen each other in a long time. There's just a general environment of either let's celebrate those who have passed on. There are those, of course, who are ignorant of just the many facts and the many tragedies around this event, who would rather just have a beer. There's a lot of informal traders who are selling alcohol, with people opting to either just do that and go smoke a blunt. I mean, the air here is just filled with the smoke of the smell of marijuana, and you just get a sense that everyone is approaching this day in the only way they know how to cope. Even the miners that are sitting up on the Kopi where the events took place are drinking. And they say to me, when I ask them in the morning, you know, but the AMCU said alcohol should not be allowed because things will get rowdy. They said it's the only way we can get through the day. So I do not expect that we'll see any such incident. The police are present here helping where they can to move people about in an orderly way, to help clear the path for the media where possible. But they're keeping a safe distance, because they're also cognizant of the fact that for a lot of the widows, for a lot of the survivors, for a lot of the children of the survivors and those who were killed, just the mere sight of uniformed police officers is staggering. Some of them I see moving about ununiformed, but the uniformed police officers have been keeping that distance as far as possible from the gathering.
Final question before we let you get back to covering that gathering. Teto, how would you characterize the size of the crowd? I've only seen pictures of the stage, not of the rest of the event. Are hundreds in attendance, dozens, thousands? How big is the gathering?
People, I would give it around 1,000 or around 900 if I'm missing the mark. Definitely not the level of turnout that I'm pre-expected. They had planned for 25,000 people with the expectation, of course, that all the workers here would be showing up. And the mining operations, the different shops here in this area employ around 18,000 people, they say. And they expected those people to come today in those numbers, because it is considered a public holiday in this part of the world, the 16th of August, simply because they need to take a moment to pause. However, the turnout is not that great. And also that could speak to the level of retrenchment that the mining industry has experienced in the past 5+ years. And the level of disgruntlement within AMCU itself, I think listeners know the kind of difficulties and leadership struggles that have been going on inside that union, with the Constitutional Court ruling some months ago that, in fact, AMCU's President Joseph Matuidi was not appointed as per the Constitution of the Union. So you sort of see that level of disgruntlement and the level of distance between AMCU and its core base, you know, resembled in the turnout. And that's something that you can't miss. The turnout is definitely far less than other commemorative events that I've attended, as we expected a lot more given the significance of the 10 years.
Teto Mashlokwana, thank you so much for that update from Marikana. Very interesting indeed to hear those final comments that AMCU predicting a crowd of 25,000 and they've got roughly 1,000.